south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's talk about crime, security, and misdemeanors here in Latin America. And I think today we could best do this by reading an email from our friend Max. He says, "Hey, John. I'm not sure if you will remember me. We spoke over Skype last year when I was considering checking out Guatemala, but then, ultimately, I decided to head over to Colombia instead. We've also corresponded, you and I, through email a few times about unrelated topics since then as well. Anyway, after returning from my first trip to Colombia, I started writing you this email, but I was busy completing my useless bachelor's degree up in the States. So here's how far I got anyway. Here's the latest version of my uncompleted draft. So, here goes. Johnny, I thought I'd catch up a little and tell you how my trip was to Colombia. I arrived in Bogota, spent about a week there. In my opinion, I don't think Bogota is ready for tourists. I intended to stay in a hostel, but found that the best hostels, at least according to Hostel World, were located in La Candelaria. Unfortunately, I read that's a dangerous area. All right, me Johnny here chiming in on that one. You know, any time you stay at a hostel and or you're doing the low-budget backpacker thing, you're going to be close to dangerous areas in Latin America because all those cheap places are in low-budget areas. And where are low-budget areas? In crap neighborhoods. That's life. However, there is an exception to that rule. If you're in a small town or a little village, the hostels and backpacker joints could be in nice or crappy areas because in small towns and villages, rents are stable and nowhere are they all that high. However, if you're in a medium or large Latin city or close to a busy tourist area, if you want to go cheap, 5, 10, 15 bucks a night, you're almost guaranteed to be in a place you don't want to walk alone at night. In the day, however, most places in Latin America are okay except in the real crappy barrios in the big cities. And still, just like in crappy areas in Chicago's South Side, you can generally drive a car through there day and night, no problem. That's more than you can say for the South Side of Chicago. And generally, I'd say even in the crappiest neighborhoods in Latin America, you can generally park your car in a guarded lot and go to the hardware store or TV repair shop, wherever you're going, within a couple blocks of the parking lot, and no one will bother you unless you're toting an iPhone or jangling the Rolex. Or pulling some other rich kid, clueless gringo move. I'm talking about walking around in a iffy neighborhood in the daytime now. And you know, it's all well and good to go on the cheap and be a backpacker type. So many of us have done that in our college years, and that's just a way to see the world, make new friends, etc., not spend too much dough. But then again, you got to recognize the fact that you're almost always going to be in a crap area. Same with Airbnbs, you know, they range all over the place too, and the cheap ones are usually going to be in crap areas too. And you know, these days, with all the hotels, hostels, and Airbnbs on the internet having their own website with all the nice pictures and stuff that are posted, looks are deceiving. Lots of well-polished turds out there on the net. And Photoshop is the norm. I've been to a couple bed and breakfasts that looked so nice on the net. And when I arrived, I was wondering if it wasn't some big mistake. Almost looked like a place in a different city. The fact is, when you see pictures of hotels, hostels, and Airbnbs and such, the real-life, real-world place could be a couple of notches down. Just like those Cupid and dating sites, a lot of people Photoshop themselves and post older pictures that are many pounds lighter. So Max, right off the bat, says he's going to stay in a hostel. Well, that sort of sets the stage for the kind of trip it's going to be. Certainly, that means no chocolate bonbons on the pillow each night, nor hot towels, not even hot water sometimes. Though occasionally, youth hostels in Europe, like in Austria, Germany, and Switzerland, they can be very clean, neat, nice, and orderly. But you should never count on that in Latin America. Usually it's you, the guest, versus the bedbugs, and a year's worth of hairballs flooding out the shower stall. So, Max, in the end, it's not surprising to me at all that you ended up in a kind of a tacky area. So, then Max says, according to Hostel World, that's a website, I guess, the La Candelaria area in Bogota, where most of the cheap youth hostels are located, is a pretty dangerous area. So then, knowing that, he says, I changed my mind and opted to stay in a nicer area, closer to the Zona Rosa, in a so-called, quote, tour hostel, whatever that is. But he says, however, even though it was in a nicer area, and I had a decent time there, meeting with the locals and chicas, etc., it didn't seem that there were any other tourists or English speakers around. Matt, so what's wrong with that? Seems like my kind of place. Off the tourist trail, very few gringos, that means no gringo gouging or gringo prices. And that also means no raucous college kids on summer vacation or spring break, mulling around looking to get drunk and laid. That also means no Botox, designer sweatsuit moms and dads hunting down a McDonald's, Papa John's, or Krispy Kreme at midnight because their whiny kids need a junk food fix. Come on, Max, what's not to like about that? Anyway, then Max says, while in Bogota, I learned that Uber is available, but in order to use that service, you have to do so discreetly because of the problems that country's regular taxi drivers have with Uber drivers. From what I remember, he says, they've had violent clashes. Taxis hate Ubers. All right, me, Johnny here. Yeah, that's right. Seems like every time Uber lands in a Latin country, the taxis try to get some legislation going, trying to outlaw them. Sometimes they get their way and sometimes they don't. And sometimes, because in Latin America the law is weak and often ineffective, Ubers may be outlawed, but they're still in operation. And sometimes, like for example in the Dominican Republic, you can get an Uber everywhere except near the airport. Somehow, they've been locked out of a country's most lucrative market. The fact is, in Latin America and even in the first world, airports have always been prime real estate for pickups because you can gouge the tourists. For example, if you're taking a ride from Santo Domingo, the capital of Dominican Republic, to the international airport, it's about a 20-minute drive. By Uber, it's something like 10 bucks, maybe a little more. But if you make the return trip from the airport to Santo Domingo, you can't take an Uber because they are not allowed in the airport area. Then, suddenly, the same route, only in reverse, will cost you 40 bucks. You can see the scam there. It's a pure tourist gouge. And in strictly tourist areas, like, for example, Cancun and in Costa Rica, regular taxis are often twice as much or more than Ubers. And since the vast majority of tourists don't speak Spanish, the Uber app doesn't do them any good in a Latin country. So you can see why traditional taxis hate having Ubers around. So then, Max says, Johnny, I would also recommend for anyone who wants to use Uber that they always message their pickup location to their Uber driver through the Uber app, as the satellites are not always adequate for driver pickup at your location. And Johnny, I repeat, I don't think Bogota is a good place at all for tourists, gringo tourists especially, because you'll get lost trying to track down an Uber if you don't know Spanish. All right, me, Johnny, here again. Yeah, he's right. If you don't know Spanish, you'll certainly fumble around because that Uber app will be in Spanish. In fact, I've been through that myself, though I have no trouble with the Spanish part. Trouble I have is I don't want to pay with a credit card. I don't give anyone my credit card over a smartphone. I always insist that I pay Uber drivers in cash. And though some people might think that strange, I say, I don't use my debit or credit cards around town, around anyone's town. Cash has certainly worked out well for me. Though I do have a debit and a credit card, and I use them for a few things online, eBay, Amazon, and some travel agency stuff. But because I never use them with restaurants or Ubers or anything around town, I've never once in almost 3 decades now had a bad or fraudulent charge I had to dispute. Can you say that about your charge cards? How's your record? Anyway, Max says, after a night at the so-called tour hostel, I decided to get an Airbnb in an area nearby the Zona Rosa, which proved to be a hassle because I didn't speak any Spanish. Like I said, there were no gringos around. And to be honest, I not only got the vibe that people thought it was inappropriate that a lone gringo would be all by himself, but I also thought I might be an easy target for crime. All right, me, Johnny, here with another comment. When he talks about the Zona Rosa, also known as the Zona Viva. Zona Rosa means the red zone, and Zona Viva means the lively zone. In other words, that's where all the action is, the nightclubs, the discos, the bars. It's also the main upscale hotel and restaurant district. By the way, Zona Rosa does not mean the red light district. It means more or less the nighttime party and hangout district. Turns out, practically every large Latin American city has a Zona Rosa or Zona Viva district. That means when you land in any medium or large city in Latin America and ask a taxi driver where the Zona Viva or Zona Rosa is, he knows exactly where to take you. By the way, those are zones that are in general pretty safe, because that's where all the upscale hotels and restaurants are, and people go on weekends to party. All right, then Max says, after Bogota, Colombia, I decided to head to Cartagena. I stayed there also at a hostel near the walled city, which is also nice. However, it seemed kind of artificial. It seemed like a colonial city established hundreds of years ago, and then someone just threw an extremely impoverished population there to live alongside of it. Even though the opposite is probably true. First came the poverty and then the walled city. Anyway, while in Cartagena, I didn't really stray far from my hostel with my new buddies I met there. It just felt strange walking around during the day and seeing such a large population of tourists around so many poor locals. All right, another comment from me, Johnny. Cartagena is a big seaside city, and they've got a section that's all walled in from the old colonial days. That is the tourist area and party zone. And yes, in Cartagena, especially around the walled city, you've got the poor population living side by side with the tourist crowd. By the way, the reason why there are so many day tourists in Cartagena, Colombia, is because the cruise ships are stopping by all the time. It's a port city, you know. Then at night, everyone has to go back to their ship, and most of the tourists are gone. Then the next day, a bunch of new tourists ramble in. And, you know, in a way, that's not a good thing. It tends to contaminate the locals. It is a sort of synthetic, unnatural situation for a city, especially since all that cruise ship tourism has just come about in maybe the last 5 or 10 years. And Max confirms this. He says, Johnny, in the walled city in Cartagena, going out at night, seeing the locals in the square felt like something out of an old black and white movie. The entertainment that night was a large black man dressed as Shakira. And Shakira, you know, is the best known entertainer to ever come out of Colombia. And Johnny, you know what? That night, we seemed to be the only group of foreign tourists in the whole square. It felt strange. There didn't seem to be a bit of intermixing between tourists and locals. They stayed exclusively separate. And to me, that was kind of awkward. Moreover, as nice as the city seemed, many parts of it were completely falling apart. All right, me Johnny again. Yes, it's true, parts of Cartagena are crumbling away. But there are very nice, upscale, wealthy areas, too. There are in every Latin city. But, you know, you really have to distinguish in a very old colonial city like that what's really falling apart and what's distressed and kept like that intentionally. You know, the word distressed is an actual architectural term. That's what happens to old classic and colonial buildings after 400 years of earthquakes, sun, and rain. Because, you know, a city like Cartagena that's over 400 years old, it has hundreds, if not thousands, of distressed buildings everywhere. A lot of them cannot be altered, you know. Why? Because the local city fathers and historical societies won't let you do that. Same thing with many cathedrals and monuments in Europe. Most of that stuff in time gets all cracked, beaten, and weathered. And certain purists like to keep it that way. And it stays that way because it's way too expensive to restore that stuff to its original condition. And that's true in the old, historic, walled-in part of the city in Cartagena, too. And you have to know that if you ever consider buying or renting a place in any old, historical, colonial district. For example, just having the plumbing and or electrical brought up to code, if you want to, for example, turn one of those old buildings into a bar or a restaurant, could very quickly run into tens of thousands of dollars. As for my opinion about Cartagena, it's a great place to visit, but I'd never want to live or invest there. For one thing, it's right on the ocean and way too hot. And now it's getting really expensive, as all of Colombia is, due to tourism and the influx of European, Chinese, and U.S. expats. But back to Max, and here's where the story gets really interesting. Turns out he left Cartagena and went to Medellin, Colombia. He says, Johnny, I met a girl on the Latin Cupid hookup site there. She forced me out of my tourist bubble, and I was basically terrified by it. But it was only because of her that I had any real first-hand evidence about what living in a Latin city is really like. During our first date, we went to a town concert where everyone was dancing salsa in a policed-off area at night. We also went to a nice park, and we decided to camp out there. So far, so good. Now, let me tell you what happened when I attempted to take a bus in downtown Medellin. Though I was slightly hesitant to get on a chicken bus because of your advice, Johnny. And though this was the first time I ever got on one, I figured I was with a local girl and there shouldn't be a problem. Now, Johnny, to give you a clearer picture of this, I was definitely the only gringo in the area and the only gringo on the bus. And I was lugging around an expensive hard case with a locking mechanism that resembled a Pelican case. And here's what happened. We were waiting there in line for the bus, and that's when I heard a woman screaming. I looked back, and I didn't notice anything out of the ordinary at first. Just then, my new girlfriend shoved me and urged me to start running. I looked back, and the woman was being toppled to the ground by a little skinny short guy carrying a little silver gun, a revolver. That's when I took off with my heavy suitcase, and I heard 3 gunshots. For a short while afterwards, I thought the guy was going to try for me and my expensive suitcase. In the end, we were able to run into the back of a store and wait it out. When it was all over, we went back to the bus station, which was just outside. The woman in charge of the station told us that the thief saw the woman pulling out money from an ATM and was trying to grab the bag she put the money in. Meanwhile, while the lady was being robbed, a man tried to save her and pull the guy off of her. However, the thief had an accomplice who was watching, and he's the guy that shot the Good Samaritan 3 times. And it's believed by most of us who saw the act, he probably died on his way to the hospital. At least that's the story I got from a female civil servant who'd witnessed all of this. Now, Johnny, the part that freaks me out the most about the situation, beyond the shooting itself, it didn't seem to make any kind of news on the internet or in the papers or anywhere at all. And later, when I told people about the situation that there was no news about it, none of the locals seemed a bit surprised. As for me, Johnny, I must say I've never seen such violence, and I was in the U.S. Marine Corps for 4 years and even deployed. And here's what happened next. Johnny, I wanted to get a different perspective on Latin America after my shooting experience in Colombia. So I went to Mexico. In fact, I once went there on vacation with my family to Mexico City. Though it was extremely packed like Bogota, there didn't seem to be enough tourists there for my taste either. All right, me Johnny again chiming in. Max, I get that you're saying you like to be in places where there are plenty of tourists. Hey, you know, to each his own. Most of us who came down with little or zero Spanish started out that way. Yet, in your case, you're telling me you want to stay in youth hostels, which means you seem to want to do things on the extra cheap. Nothing wrong with that either. However, I think maybe, Max, you'd really need to come to one of my expat insider seminars. Because, Max, it looks like you're doing a lot of things that aren't really recommended. Where do you think the term clueless gringo comes from? First of all, Matt, what were you doing taking a chicken bus? I must have said 100 times, that's not what you want to do. Worse yet, you're toting an expensive hard shell case with you? In and around public metro and bus stations? Max, what can I say? Look, if you're staying at hostels, for one thing, you don't want to bring any nice expensive stuff along with you on the trip, because in hostels, people are always coming and going. Everyone's got the key to everyone else's door. And if they don't, those locks can be picked in a second. Hell, I could do it with a rusty butter knife. Not only that, there are no room safes or front door security. There are all kinds of shared spaces like kitchens, bathrooms, dining rooms, lounges. And you know, I can't tell you how many stories of petty theft and document theft I've heard from gringos and expats who've done Latin America or even Europe in hostels and backpacker hotels on the cheap. Anyway, Max said he went to Mexico. Guess where? Tijuana. Oh, Max, you went to Tijuana. Now, there's a despicable hellhole if I've ever seen one. Believe me, and I'll say this just once, it's no place for man nor beast. It's like the Star Wars bar scene for real. I've been there, I know, and this is what Max has to say. He says, Johnny, for some reason I thought it would be a good idea to go to Tijuana because I used to have a Mexican girlfriend in San Isidro. And I have to say, certain parts in Tijuana were fun, yes. I was even there during New Year's Eve, but I had no idea how dangerous it really was. I think I even read, after the fact, it's the most dangerous city in the world. However, I was in a super nice 5-star hotel, and not a youth hostel. But I do remember looking at the news, seeing what seemed like a whole village chasing a guy who had raped and or killed a woman. Anyway, Johnny, in the end, I still love listening to your podcast, and I think my experiences in Latin America have proven it to be too dangerous for my taste, and I'm considering another Plan B destination. What I can't understand is, having listened to your podcast for a while, if those incidents that happened to me during my only 2-week visits in Latin America in the last couple of years, how is that you have been able to live there for over 20 years and don't seem to have experienced stuff like that? And, Johnny, how is Guatemala, which is cited in numerous articles to be just as poverty-stricken and dangerous as the places I've been to, different than any other place? I don't know, Johnny. What's the story? Sincerely, Max. Well, first off, Max, it's like this. I talk about lots of things on my shows. I've had 920 shows so far. And I do repeat some stuff because new listeners are coming on all the time. And I have to tell you, if I was to sum up the point of my show, it's not to tell you what to do or how to live your life or how to be a great expat. You could sum it up by saying my show is all about showing you what not to do. Because if you just follow a short list of guidelines, bad things are not going to happen to you. Of course, there's always bad luck. That can happen to anyone. I mean, look, why do most lightning strikes occur on golf courses? Because certain idiot golfers are so addicted, they finish their round in the rain. And you got to ask yourself, where are 90% of all the cell phones in Latin America stolen? Have a guess. On chicken buses, at chicken bus stops, and in lower middle class neighborhoods. So if you want to get scientific about it, statistically speaking, you don't want to be where 90% of the crimes occur. So what's that mean? Easy. Skip chicken buses, chicken bus stops, public transportation, lower middle class and poor neighborhoods. And that means neighborhoods where they have very cheap backpacker hotels and hostels. Oh, and another thing. All you guys out there using Latin Cupid and Tinder, I'd say at least a quarter of the girls out there are out to scam a gringo. And though they might not have started out with those intentions, soon enough, many of them figure out gringos are an easy touch, which is why many of them juggle quite a few guys at a time and get a little dough from each one of them. And even if you meet them and they don't overtly scam you, soon enough, you're bound to catch them in a lie or two. Man, those dating sites sure collect some expert liars. And if you don't believe that, ask yourself why so many Latinas on Cupid and Tinder are looking for guys specifically living up in the States. Check it out. Most of them state that right on their profiles. By the way, ask yourself why these girls are on Cupid in the first place. Well, I'll tell you, almost all of them because of some hardship, sad story, or because they're dead broke. In fact, it's so easy to prove it. Just try this. Go to LatinAmericanCupid.com. Sign up, use a fake name and email if you want. And after you set up your profile, they'll ask you to set up a little profile of the kind of girls you want to meet with or go out with, whatever. And when it gets to the part where you have to check the box asking if you prefer a girl without kids, check the box that says, you don't mind, it doesn't matter. Then pick a Latin country. Let's pick Panama. Then put an age range in, let's say 18 to 30. Then click the search button. Now you'll see all the pages of ladies who fit that description. In fact, I'm doing it right now. Come up with 236 pages of girls. And I'd say there are about 20 girls per page. That's just for Panama. All right, now go back to the preference page and modify your search. This time, leave everything the same except the box that says children, kids. I'm there right now. There's a drop-down list, and I'm putting zero. In other words, I'm looking for girls in the range of 18 to 30 years old from Panama that have no kids. With education, height, weight, and all the other stuff, not important in this little test. All right, I click the search button, and guess what? There are four pages of girls. That's four pages of girls with no kids out of 236 pages. All right, now we'll do the third grade math, and guess what? The Panamanian girls who have no kids, who are on Cupid, that are between 18 and 30, represent just slightly over 1.5% of all the eligible girls on Cupid in that category. And guess what? I'll be willing to bet you half of those are lying. In other words, half the girls are playing a game. They lie in their profile and say they have no kids because they think it'll hurt their chances of finding an eligible guy because having a kid, you know, is baggage. So where am I going with this? Well, think about it. If these statistics are right, 98% of the girls on Cupid are single mothers. In other words, they're either divorced from daddy or he just abandoned mommy and the kids, which is usually the case here in Latin America when you encounter a single mother. And single mothers down here are almost always living hand to mouth, and somehow they almost always end up on Tinder and or Latin American Cupid. And if I were to make a guess, I'd say only about 10% of Latino fathers who are divorced or who have abandoned their wife and kids actually pay child support or help out the mother or kid in any way, except maybe for birthdays and Christmas. So basically, these hookup and pickup sites like Cupid and Tinder are just loaded with single mothers with tons of baggage and having a real hard time in life. And lots of them have figured out gringos are a soft touch. Let me tell you, every day's a jackpot day for Western Union. Because it's true, most of these girls, within the first couple of conversations you have with them, they'll start sending you a sad emoji here and there on your WhatsApp. And you'll say, using your Google Translate, of course, "What's up with that? Are you sad? Is something wrong?" Then, little by little, you'll hear the story about the cell phone that got stolen, a sick grandma, the university classes that need to be paid, the optometrist bill. And when you hear the kind of dough they owe, $75, $100, you're thinking, hell, that's nothing. That's chicken feed. I'll help the girl out. But how? I'm 2,000 miles away. Then she suggests Western Union. How convenient. Then suddenly the clueless gringo and Western Union become pretty good buddies. By the way, lots of gringos and expats who've fallen into that trap have sent me emails explaining stories like that. I don't mention them on the air much because I don't want to make this Johnny's Gringo Latina Lonely Hearts Club show. But I give them all the same advice. I say, look, she might be a really nice girl. What you're doing is helping her out, and it's not going to be any skin off your back, a couple of $100 here and there. But before you get in too deep, try this out. Tell her you want her to send you a scan or a photo of her passport or cédula. And of course, she's going to say, what for? Don't you trust me? Then your answer should be, well, when I go to Western Union, they ask me to show them my passport. They take a photocopy of it. So I'm not asking too much. I just want to be sure. And you'll find that's the moment that separates the men from the boys, the BSers from the truthers. Just note that if she hems and haws and gives you any flack and tries to talk you out of it, brother, you've been scammed. In fact, it's been proven. There are thousands of girls making a living. They've made it their job. Stringing along 10 or 20 clueless gringos on those Cupid and Tinder sites, milking each one of them for a hundred or two every couple of months or weeks, knowing full well that those gringos live in another country, far, far away, and they most likely will never visit. And if they do, she'll have another crop of excuses and some convincing lies because you don't speak Spanish and you really can't read a person unless you speak their language. You know, I wish I had time to go through some of these emails. They're just fascinating. How clueless gringos could get so captivated by a pretty face that they'll send hundreds of dollars to someone they haven't even met who doesn't even speak their language. Oh, and as for Max, one last thing. Isn't it funny? I never seem to get emails about bad experiences similar to yours from people who've attended my Expat Insider Seminar. Why do you think that is? Because at the seminar, you get the full drinking from the fire hose treatment. And after a week of that, you walk out of there with a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B, including a nice stiff dose of how not to be a clueless gringo. Oh, and one last thing. Don't forget to go to my website, www.theexpatfiles.com, to pick up my 100-page Latin American healthcare report. If you're contemplating a plan B, you'll most certainly need it. South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos. No Spanish lady.